Hey y'all, you're back. Jackie, you want to tell the people what's up?
Hey y'all, in this episode, we speak with published author Toni Newman about being a proud Black Southern transgender woman.
Yes, and we also talk art and representation with local artist Ethan Parker. Are you ready?
Should I read an excerpt from my book, Thugs and the Women Who Love Them, as if I was doing before we started the show?
Yes.
I know you got to hear it, but the people, you know, they didn't. No, it's okay. Guys, Thugs and the Women Who Love Them, the Thugs series, go out and read it. Dalia doesn't appreciate it, but go out and read
it. I'm not even going to say anything because I'm not here to tear other Black women down. I'm only here to lift us up.
She wrote the books from jail.
Anyway.
I'm an American, and I got a say in who makes my food.
Well, baby, it's too late for that. Fag has been breeding your cows, raising your chickens, even brewing your beer long before I walk my sexy ass up in this motherfucker.
Dalia spoke to African-American transgender author Toni Newman. Newman is currently the executive director of St. James Infirmary, which is a peer-based occupational health and safety clinic for former and current sex industry workers in San Francisco.
Ms. Newman, who is originally from North Carolina, wrote a memoir called I Rise, The Transformation of Toni Newman, which chronicles her male-to-female transition. Her work as an erotic professional and more. You know, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? You know, for people who haven't read your book, you know, how would you describe yourself and your story?
I am a Southern, how would I say this? I was raised in Jacksonville, North Carolina as a Southern Christian boy with two Christian parents who realized at an early age I was a female, female inside, but a male showing outside. And the book is really about my 20-year journey of being that Southern boy to transitioning to being an African-American trans woman and all that comes with that and the struggles that I endured when I made that decision to become an African-American trans woman, some of the things I went through and had to endure and overcome. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I kind of want to start from the beginning, right? You kind of mentioned how, you know, you were raised in a loving home, you know, you didn't experience any abuse or anything. But how was it kind of struggling with kind of coming into yourself, but being, like you said, you know, Southern and Black?
I was a very effeminate, as they called it in Southern terms years ago, sissy boy. Very girly, and I endured, even though it was a loving home, from cousins, nieces, nephews, uncles, aunts, my mannerisms, my being was that of a very feminine boy. I caught a lot of flack for that. My mother and father were wonderful and protective and very good to me, brought me up in a very loving home, but I was something different, and that different was what was against what they stood for. I never could fully express that I was gay and or transgender in that home at that age because it just wasn't permitted or allowed. I knew that. You know, my mother was a strict, you know, disciplinarian. You know, she spoke, she said what she said, you did what you did. And that just wasn't allowed. I knew that was against her religious beliefs, her personal beliefs, her ideology. It just wasn't what she was about. And I knew they were not going to accept that. So I never really spoke of it, even though I was effeminate, a lot of times called sissy boy and girly boy. They knew that and, you know, would protect me and leave Toni alone. That's not nice, guys, and stuff like that. But, you know, they didn't fully recognize what I was, and I think she knew in the bottom of her heart because I was her child, and I think a mother knows their child. And I don't think she wanted to acknowledge it. I didn't acknowledge it. And we went on for 18 years in that house with that, me not acknowledging it, she not acknowledging it, until I went on to Wake Forest University on scholarship.
Yeah. And so before we kind of go into Wake Forest, can you tell me a little bit about, because we kind of talked about this before in, you know, a few of our other, you know, podcast episodes about how a lot of this, like the Southern mentality here is, you know, don't ask, don't tell. Right. And so, you know, can you tell me a little bit about that struggle of like coming out to your parents and, you know, talking to your mom, who is one of the most important figures, right, in a Black Southern household.
Yes.
And having that conversation with her.
Well, it was difficult. I mean, when I told her in the beginning that I was homosexual, because that's at that point I didn't know a lot about transgenders. I knew I was in a female body, but, you know, I came out first as gay. That was tough. It was very hard for her to digest. The communication fell apart. She told me to pray about it, ask God to help me, which I did, knowing, and I'd already been doing that, knowing that wasn't going to help. But I agreed to do it because I loved her so. And she was so hurt by my announcement of being gay that I had finally spoken what she knew. And I asked her, "Didn't you know?" And she said, "I've been praying about it so hard, so I thought God would fix it. I just thought he would fix it." And she knew, but she was praying that it wasn't so, and I'd be healed, and I wouldn't be gay, and then I announced that. So that was a lot for her to take. My siblings knew it and didn't have that much to say about it. They'd already figured it out, but she just didn't want me to acknowledge it, to speak it, because once it's spoken, it's in the universe, and it makes it true. So, and that was some of the things she said. Now that you've spoken it, you've accepted it. And what do we do from here? You should have never accepted it. You should have kept praying on it, and God could have delivered you from it. And I said, "I've been praying for over a decade, and I'm still this way." And that was pretty much the conversation, and I kind of went my way, and she went hers.
Yeah, and I mean, did this conversation, you know, ever come up again between you two?
It did, such as when I would call home, "Hi, I'm praying for you. God is going to deliver you."
Mm, yeah.
"I'm putting my hands in the hands of God. Yeah. We loved you. We treated you well. God is going to fix this."
Yeah. And did that ever complicate kind of your relationship with God then, you know?
You know, in the beginning it did not, and then it did when she turned against me and everyone kind of turned against me, and then I realized I was on my own, and then I was like, whoa, I've acknowledged the truth. I've told the truth, finally. I've been a liar for so long, but now that I'm telling the truth, no one wants to hear it. And no one wants to stand beside me. And then I thought, I guess I really am on my own. I guess I really am out here on my own. And I kind of took that persona right on to the early age of my transition, that time frame of like, I guess I'm on my own. Because she'd been praying, I'd been praying, and I thought if I told the truth and became honest, and stop lying and being deceitful about who I was and where I was going. I lied so much. I couldn't keep up with all the lies because, oh, I'm going over here when I'm over there. And, you know, I thought if I just told the truth, things would get better. But they got worse by being honest.
Yeah. And I think that this is like a perfect transition to kind of talk about your experience at Wake Forest, where the amazing Maya Angelou was, and I know that you even talk about, you know, meeting her, you know.
Yeah. You know, she came 1980, the year before, or 81. I came to Wake Forest in 81. And it was announced when I got there she had signed or just signed. So she was new. I was new. I never heard of her before. And I started reading some of her works and going to the poetry readings and going to some of the stuff that she was at events of. And then I just read the poem, "I Rise," and, you know, "You may treat me like dirt, but just like dirt, I rise."
Mm-hmm.
You know, "You may laugh at me," blah, blah, blah. And it just, you know, the poem kind of, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was worded well, but I didn't know the significance of that poem until I got into the core of my transition, where I had no one to count on.
Yeah, and before
gay friends had turned against me because I was a young professional, gay, making good money. Why would you do this to yourself? Who wants to be that?
Yeah.
They're drag queens in clubs.
Yeah, and so speaking of drag queens, can you tell me a little bit about this kind of like nightlife that you kind of describe, right? Where you kind of see yourself represented. You know, you kind of come from, you know, a place where you don't see a lot of transgender women and men, exhibited before. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I was in Winston-Salem and would go out to the row where the drag queens and transgender women were working, and was fascinated with, you know, them doing their thing, being so bold. It's the first time I could dress up. But, of course, I wasn't out there hustling for money because I had a scholarship. I lived in the dorm. Then I moved off campus with some other folk. So, you know, I was looking at them like, you know, why are you out here? Why are you out here prostituting and hustling? And, you know, they would say, we can't get jobs. And I'm like, what? Why can't you get a job? Not knowing that 10 years down the road, that would be me in New York City. I never thought that that would be me doing the same exact thing that these ladies were doing for pure survival. I didn't want to be a prostitute on the streets of 14th Street in Manhattan in the meatpacking district. I had no way to get money. Nobody would hire me. I was interviewing 10 to 15 times a week. Nobody would give me a job. So I became a prostitute and joined the same people I saw years ago in Winston-Salem on the streets of New York. The exact same people.
Yeah. And so can you tell me a little bit about that then? Kind of, you know, navigating life, you know, as a black gay male, and then, you know, kind of transitioning and coming into your full self and kind of dealing with, some of the consequences of doing that because of people's ignorance.
The black gay male experience was wonderful for me. I had a great group of friends. I was working, making good money. My black male friends were also very progressive black males, making good money. I was a part of a group of five or six black men, doctors and lawyers. We got together for weekends, and we cooked dinner at each other's homes. A lot of love, a lot of appreciation. But when I transitioned to an African-American trans woman of color, I never saw so much dislike, not among straights, but among my own black gay peers. My black gay peers left me hanging with no support, advised me this was a bad move. My parents told me it was a bad move. My work friends told me it was a bad move. No one agreed with me to do this. But it's something I had to do because I was never happy. I was always depressed. I was always crying. I was always going out at night, joining trans women of color who were always on the street during my time. You never saw them working jobs. They were always prostituting or hustling on the street or in the bars, and that's where I spent most of my nightlife, following them, trying to mimic them and be them.
Yeah, and, you know, all the while, you know, you're kind of going through this, what kept you going, right? You have everybody else telling you, you know, that this is a mistake, that you shouldn't be doing it, right? What was it in the back of your mind that...
It was at that point that Christianity left and spirituality came in. It was at that point of all those years of teaching about King James and the Bible and Psalms and Solomon and David in the Bible and right and wrong, I began to find my own spiritual growth and journey. Because I was hungry a lot, I was crying a lot, I was depressed a lot, and I had hardly any friends out there because they were struggling. They were fighting for their survival. So it was hard to maintain a friendship. We were all looking for a place to stay for this night, this week. So that's when I began to pray and ask God, if you are supportive of what I'm doing here, I'm being honest with you. You know this is in my heart. Where do I go from here? I mean, you want me to die out here on the streets? That's what's going to happen. These girls are getting killed out here. They're dying. They're getting beat up out here. I'm going to die out here if I continue to do this and not get some support from somewhere. And I just that's the spiritual journey, during that low struggle of transitioning, with me putting on the wig, finally taking hormones, finally transitioning to be a woman. It was then that I started accepting spirituality and not Christianity.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's kind of what kept me in the beginning. I would pray, not knowing if anybody heard the prayer, but it kind of made me feel better to know that I've been praying and asking for help. And I just kept thinking, help will come.
Yeah.
Help will come. And eventually it did.
And
help did come.
You know, you
eventually.
Talk, yeah, and you briefly, mentioned, a lot of your girlfriends, right, who weren't so lucky, right? What do you think made you different, right, or made you fortunate enough not to have?
It's just a blessing. Yeah. A lot died from overdose. A lot died from the abuse of a boyfriend. A lot have died from disease, AIDS, out working the streets. They were not being protective. And out of all of that, I always tried to take care of myself. I never engaged in heavy drugs. I never engaged in heavy drinking. And no matter who I was with, I always practiced safe sex. That was almost foremost to me. Well, I never said, okay, you pay me more money, we can do bareback. We can do it without a condom. And I just, I think that saved me. By avoiding those three pitfalls, drugs, alcohol, and having safe sex, I think that's why I'm here today. That I practiced safe sex and I avoided the pitfall that so many, and it was easy to get into that. You're depressed, you're lonely, you're homeless. Who doesn't need something? Who doesn't need vodka? Who doesn't need a drug to make you feel better? You feel unloved. You feel unwanted. I'm not judging them. I understand why they did it.
Hmm.
I wanted to sometime just to ease the pain, but I never engage. And I think that's why I've made it this far.
Yeah. And what words of encouragement do you say to somebody who's going through, their own identity struggle, especially, at your lowest point?
Well, I would say, listen, if this is what you believe you are, only you and God know, stand up. The first thing to do is be honest. Once I told the truth, even though I was unhappy for a long time, my inner soul felt good because I was free. I wasn't hiding anymore. I wasn't lying anymore. So my first advice to anyone who might be going through identity crisis, gender, identity, whatever it may be, tell the truth. Be who you are. Stand up. And now, more than ever, there are organizations like St. James and many other organizations, Transgender Law Center. Oh, you have help here. You don't have to go through this alone. There was no Transgender Law Center. There was no transgender groups when I was coming 20 years ago. These organizations were not even in existence. There is no reason for you not to be who you are now. And we will support you. There are groups to help you with name change. There's Obamacare to help you with transitioning and drugs. There's no need now. Stand up. We will support you. There are organizations just like this one who will stand behind you.
And speaking of, advocacy, you do a little work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I go out and speak to youth as much as possible. My passion is youth, especially Southern youth, who are struggling. They didn't have a voice. I try to put a voice and a face to their story, whether they're male to female or female to male. That's a passion of mine, to say, hey, if I did it, I went to Wake Forest, I went to graduate school, I landed on my feet, I'm healthy, I'm in love, I have a partner, I'm happy, I'm doing my best work, I'm working at a company that I enjoy. This is my calling, and this can be your calling. If I can do it, I'm not special, I'm not unique. Hard work and being honest and truthful and authentic is the only way to be. I'm here to support you with that.
Yeah. One of my few questions left here, but, a lot of people who listen are here, they're in the South, right? And I don't think that it's as apparent in ways that you could help a lot of the trans community. So what advice do you have for folks who are trying to learn more and trying to help and you know, and just be an ally? What advice do you have?
If you recognize a youth who's struggling, show compassion, show love. The South isn't as bad as it used to be. I have a great relationship with my family now, 24 years later. So there's hope. Don't give up. And if you see a youth who's struggling in school with whatever they're struggling with, of sexual identity, gender identity, show love and support. That means the world to them. Give them a face of love, because we don't know their home life and what they are experiencing at home, especially in the southern cities. It's very religious still in the South. You know, the Christianity rules supreme, and that's not a bad thing, but their views on homosexuality, transgenderism, it's just not correct. It's not right. I think God loves us all. So if you run across a youth who is battling or suffering with gender or sexual identity, please show support and try to put them in touch with someone like me or another group who will be more than willing to help them along to be their best them.
Yeah. And my last question, we ask every single guest that we have on the show this question.
Okay.
You can answer honestly, you know, depending on what your answer is, I guess, you know, kind of affects my mood, but I'm going to let you have it. How do you feel about Beyonce?
I like Beyonce. I like her a lot. I don't understand. That's a very unique question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there hidden meaning with the Beyonce question?
No.
I like her. I'm not one of her biggest fans.
Mm-hmm.
I love her music.
Yeah.
She seemed to be supportive, from what I understand, and made some supportive remarks and comments. So I'm a fan. I wouldn't say I'm one of the Beehive. I think that's her group's name.
Yes, it is. Yes.
I'm more of a Whitney Houston type of fanatic.
Okay, we'll take it.
Than a Beyonce fanatic, only because Whitney Houston and I are in the same age bracket.
Yes.
And she was swinging it. You know,
there is no Beyonce without Whitney, so I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah, but I think Beyonce is great. I'm supportive. I think she's a sweet, sweet young woman.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. We like me and Jackie are like diehard Beyonce fans, so we ask every episode.
I like her. I'm more of a Whitney Houston. I think that's a generational gap.
Yes.
Between you and I, because Whitney was swinging it at Wake Forest when I was dancing up in the clubs at night. Doing my shit, I was with Whitney, honey. I want to dance with somebody. I was looking for somebody.
Rest in peace. Well, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
I just want to thank you and your station and your readers for showing love to me. I hope someone hears this and I can be a blessing to you and to them or to anyone. I'm open.
Mm-hmm.
Go to TonyDNewman.com, my website, and that's Tony D. Newman with the I on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn to contact me. I respond to everyone, and I'm just trying to show love. I feel very blessed. I'm very happy.
You can find Tony Newman on her website at www.tonynewman.com and on her Twitter at Tony Newman, and that's Tony with an I, T-O-N-I. Ethan Parker is a self-taught illustrator and comic artist here in Austin. The Houston area-born artist's work is rooted in social causes at the intersections of Black womanhood and the queer trans community.
I guess I would kind of describe myself as the elephant in the room sometimes, where people notice me, but they don't really want to talk about me. They just want to talk around me and like around my identity. And what I do is kind of force people to engage with my identity, like in a very intentional way. So I do that with my expression of self as well as the art that I create. People seem to like to talk around my different identities. Like they are aware and acknowledge that I am queer, I am black, I am trans, but it's like no one wants to address that directly or make accommodations in that space. They would just rather kind of move around the topic. Like with my art, I like to center the experiences that I've had at the intersections of being black and trans and queer and from the South, and like, and so it, a lot of the works that I create are a journal style comic where I just like, this is an experience that I've had, and then I share that out in an unapologetic way. I don't like dance around it, use fancy language, like this is just what it is, this is just the raw element of it. I started during a kind of a struggle with my mental health in 2014. I was having like a really intense episode. It was hard for me to process it. My partner at the time was like, hey, you used to say you liked to draw when you were younger. Here's some like stuff to draw. Maybe this will help you like find out what you need to do. And so I was like, thank you, boo. So I took the sketch pads and I was angry and irritated. And so I just started to express that and start to create comics that reflected the experience that I was having, the thoughts that I was having. And I feel that a lot of people outside of the queer community, outside of specifically like the black queer community, miss out on that beauty and that blossoming because they are intentionally misdirecting themselves or censoring the experiences of queer and trans people, more specifically queer and trans people of color, even deeper, queer and trans black people. And so just kind of spotlighting that and like highlighting that this is the growth and the development and the beauty of my community. This is what my identity looks like. This is what forms it takes. This is how it shows up in the world. And being able to, I guess, recreate that and share that out in different ways is what resonates with people. What I'm continuing the work doing is a portrait series on how different trans masculine people, specifically like black trans masculine people, are queering black masculinity through their expressions of self, how they show up in the world, the work that they do in their communities. And so painting these portrait series, or the portraits in the series, and then allowing that person to tell their story alongside it. So it's just kind of a platform, like, oh, I'm drawn in by portraits. And then you can actually engage with the story of these people from pretty much all over North America. There are a couple people in Australia, which is wild. And I was like, okay, get it. So I'm doing the portraits digitally, which is for someone who's working on a shoestring budget. It is how I have to do things in this moment. But I'm creating digital portraits and kind of following up with that is doing the interview process with the people that I selected for the portrait series and creating a kind of an art book to go along with it. My goal would be to have an in-person gallery exhibit type of thing that people can come to and engage with here in Austin or anywhere really. So if you want this, get it. But also provide something that people can take home and share in their communities, share in their families, and things like that.
All right, so we're at the end of the show. Dalia, what is your to and fro moment this week?
I think that my to and fro moment is always, I feel like my to and fro moment is always related to like mental health and stability, because I am constantly, as a 23-year-old, you know, in a midlife crisis, as always. But I would say, you know, take a break for yourself if need be. Cut off your phone, you know, put your phone on do not disturb if need be, but don't ever be afraid to take time for yourself and don't feel guilty for doing so. I did that this weekend. Nobody, like, I was on like a stranded island. Like, I made sure nobody would be able to get a hold of me because I just needed a break. And so I feel rejuvenated afterwards. Did I drink a whole bottle of wine by myself and watched On My Block? Yeah, I did.
I do that once a week. And On My Block, I'm so happy you watched it, Aaliyah. Oh my God.
Finally. Honestly, and I just started Jane the Virgin, too. I don't know what's taking me so long.
I couldn't get into Jane the Virgin, but On My Block, Aaliyah, I wept.
Jane the Virgin, her mom and her grandma totally remind me of my family.
They told me it's kind of like a telenovela.
It is. And so
I can't really get into it, but I might start.
Also,
again.
Riverdale. I'm Sherry. I'm Cheryl.
What part are you? You're
I'm Cheryl Bombshell.
Okay, what part are you, like, how far are you into this, like, most recent season?
Oh, I'm done with the second season. I'm just waiting on third season to come out.
So I waited because, like, Riverdale is a show I need to binge.
Yes, you do.
And so I was watching it at first, but I'm just on the part. I love the whole Cheryl and Tony, like, lesbian triangle. I love it. I feel like they make a great couple.
I feel like Cheryl is coming fully into her own.
But they just sent Cheryl to that conversion camp, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, her people are
wait, so you didn't make it to
crazy.
The end of season two yet?
No, I'm not done. I'm
okay,
not done.
Well, keep watching.
I'm like, I have like 6 episodes left. I feel like Chick is FP's son.
I'm not telling you anything, and I feel like everybody is really pissed at us right now because we are really spoiling.
I don't care.
All right. I just want to let everybody know that I considered your feelings and Jackie did not. So I need y'all to take note of that and just realize who's the better person.
Everybody
right
that
now.
Listens to podcasts, you got a 15 skip second button. And so if you heard us talking about a show that you didn't want to listen to, all you have to do is skip forward.
This is a very valid argument. I can argue with that as well.
I finished so many shows. Like, it's so much on. I finished How to Get Away with Murder.
I watched Coco for the first time.
Oh, did you love it?
Oh, I cried like a baby. I don't know.
I saw it in theaters. It was so good. I don't like that when Pixar does movies, they do movies, and they go out.
And baby, when I tell you that they researched for this movie, all the historical aspects,
yeah,
I said, yes, this is the movie that we deserved and that we were waiting on. A little brown boy just really trying to come into his own and find himself and have his family accept him for who he is. And I was just like, wow.
I just love that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I love when movies do that. Just like Wreck-It Ralph, like, I thought it was going to be, like, Coco, I thought it was going to be about him, like, playing. I don't know what I thought it was going to be. But, like, Wreck-It Ralph, like, I thought it was just going to be about him getting a coin.
Exactly.
But then it turned out to be so much deeper than that. Like, I love when movies are like that.
All right, so, Jackie, what is your to and fro moment?
My first one is let people enjoy things. And this goes out to all the people that are retweeting and reposting Beyonce stuff. Okay, I have muted Beyonce, Jay-Z, okay. On the Run 2,
all right.
Blue, the Twins. I muted all of that. And still somehow they're slipping through the cracks because y'all are posting these pictures of Beyonce. And it's just... y'all are trying to ruin my concert experience. At this point, it's just inescapable because even her own team, like Neil, Ashley, Beyonce herself, Miss Tina, you guys are all posting things.
Yes.
I wanted to be surprised. Now I know that I'm going to see the Twins. And I
Jackie,
know certain choreographies I'm going to see. And I just let people enjoy things. Let people be surprised.
Can
I have to repost
can I ask
everything.
You, can I ask you, you know,
what?
Why is it that we of all people deserve to have this experience? Can you explain, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we
because
here.
I'm very much a person, like, I guess my to and fro moment is just, like, I'm saying, like, let people enjoy things and let people receive things that they want to receive them. Like, just realize, like, my to and fro moment is to stop being selfish. Like, stop, look into
let
yourself
me,
and realize
let you
that
receive
it's
God's
a messed
blessing.
Up thing that you're doing.
I get
this
it.
Is just exactly how I used to get mad during the summer when power used to be, I still have all these power keywords, like muted.
Okay.
Power comes on at 7 p.m., 8 p.m., whatever, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But they used to release it at 12 p.m. on stars.com.
Okay.
People was tweeting spoilers at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
I'm like, are you serious? Like, just stop being so selfish. Like, look into yourself and realize that some people like surprises. And I know that you may not, but it's okay for you to recognize that some people do. And
yes.
Stop being so selfish and stop posting
stuff. Stop being selfish
stuff.
And stop posting stuff. Because we deserve this of if the country queen is coming here in September, and I would just like to say that everybody in Texas, everybody from Texas, everybody in Houston deserves an unfaltered and an unspoiled performance.
And it's already spoiled at this point.
Honestly, every time I see anything Beyonce, I just keep scrolling. The last one I saw was people complaining about her being in a thong, and I was like, y'all, shut up.
Yeah, somebody said her booty wasn't real. And I'm, girl, okay. Like, anyway.
And that's a $1 billion booty. It don't matter.
It's
very real.
It's very real.
That's very real.
And I guess my other to and fro moment, like on a more serious note, since I just yelled at people about Beyonce.
I mean, sometimes tough love is what you have to do to get your point across. I get it.
Okay. My to and fro moment is kind of just like, so of course I've moved from San Marcos and I moved, you know, like back home. And so it's just really weird trying to like navigate that space between, cause you know, being black and having a black mom, you know, a lot of times, a lot of things you say like can be perceived as disrespectful. And so like, you know, when you don't necessarily like agree with your parents or agree with anything. And so I guess my to and fro moment is just like encouraging everyone who's like in that moment of transition, because I'm in that moment of transition as well, you know, where you have your own ideas and you're your own adult, but your parents may not see you as that all the time. And just, you know, like stay strong, you know, even though your parents may say some ignorant stuff, it's I was going to say it, so you do love them, but don't be afraid to call out your family members on things that they say that are problematic, and don't be afraid and don't feel like singled out or because you think differently than other people, and just you're going through a different life. You're going through transition. There's been so many other people who've gone through the same transition before, and just stay strong. And there's a light at the end of the tunnel when you got your own apartment, and it's going to be glorious.
Yeah.
I know you can't relate.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know.
You can't relate.
I don't know this life, so.
You didn't move back home.
You have the choice of moving back home to Houston. I don't have the choice of moving back home to a very small rural town where it's very easy to get stuck. So I think I did not move back home for my sanity and my success as well. So, yeah.
That's smart.
But Houston, there, you can make money moves in Houston. You can't make what moves you gonna make? We ain't got number restaurants. We good. Well, that's the end of the show.
Make sure to tell your friends about us. We're streaming everywhere you get your podcasts. Leave us a review and follow us on Twitter at The To and Fro on Facebook.
Music by Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Chris Honey B.
Dalia, do you have anything to leave the peoples with today?
Yes. You know, to all these haters out here, you know what I'm saying? You know, just check yourself, you know, because jealousy is such an ugly color on you. And I would not want you to go out looking like a fool.
You know, I agree with this one for once. I do.
Thanks. I feel judged. I'm not going to judge you. Like, you're not going to judge me, right? I'm not going to judge you about your thug nasty books. You know,
first of all, those are a form of self-care.
Okay. Whatever you have to say to get yourself through the night. All right.
I will.
Okay. Whatever.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.